Once upon a time, I guess in the beginning, Reed Martin and I wrote the greatest story ever sold, A Funny Look at the Bible, published by Westminster John Knox Press. That book went out of print, but we retained the rights, and now
it's been resurrected.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 315, our new ebook.
Yes. Just in time for the holidays. And the great thing is that there's holy days pretty much all at all times of the year. We have republished our book, The Greatest Story Ever Sold, under a brand new title called How the Bible Changed Our Lives, Mostly for the Better.
And Austin, why did we change the name?
I think we changed the name. You can help me out with this. I think we changed the name because we wanted a title that more accurately reflected what the book was. We were asked by Westminster John Knox Press to write a funny book about the Bible. They sort of commissioned us. And we did. And we went back and forth on titles, The Greatest Story Ever Sold. And it had a subtitle, something about the good part.
The whimsical ruminations on the best part of the good book or something like that.
Right. And but yes, that is actually what the book is. It was basically going through every book of the Bible and us writing, hopefully, funny observations about every single book of the Bible. That was the goal. And then and we did write that. And at one point in the process, I remember thinking, I remember we sat in that bar right near DuPont Circle, mm-hmm. kind of hashing it out when we were playing the Kennedy Center once. And we sat there and kind of over several beers at that bar, we went, yeah, okay, this is how it could work. Mm-hmm. And we decided to alternate chapters in the telling of the story, of the telling of the book.
Like Austin would write chapter one, I'd write chapter two, and so on.
Right, that's right. Yes, I had the odd chapters, you had the odder chapters.
Yes.
But there was a certain point at which I went, well, wait, if this is going to be a book, there needs to be a story. Mm-hmm. And so what it became is Reed and I sat out then to write the story, the kind of the personal narrative, the sort of personal comic memoir aspects of what it was like for each of us to write a book about the Bible.
Yeah, our own spiritual journey. And yeah. So we talk about...
Every book about the Bible is a spiritual journey. Right.
Right. And so we talk about Genesis, and then that sort of then transitions into a discussion of the beginnings of our spiritual journey.
Yes.
And then we get to, you know, the Ten Commandments. Well, what rules do we live by in our spiritual life? And that sort of thing. And so we each have our own sort of personal plot that end up, you know, crossing and getting twisted and then, you know, a happy ending. It's the Bible, right?
Well, it was really funny because our personas in the book are exaggerated for comic effect. You are sort of described yourself as more of a born-again Christian, which is not true about you.
Right. But a guy who's oblivious to his effect on others. So in that sense, it's accurate. And so as you read through my spiritual journey, you know, I'm seeking guidance from this pastor, but in fact, I'm stalking him in his opinion, and I really am, but my character doesn't realize. And so there's restraining orders and he's running away and, you know, but I don't get it. So. Yeah.
Well, and my character is, you refer to me in the book as either an atheist or a pagan, not unlike the Christmas show. Mm-hmm. In the Christmas show, which is accurate in the sense that if you are a believer, you believe that anyone who doesn't believe is a pagan or an atheist. That seems to be true. I have an aunt and an uncle who are charismatic Catholics.
Right.
And when I was first introduced to them as a fiance, a boyfriend, a fiance, they referred to me as the pagan. And I think
in what they think is a joking way.
In what they think is a joking way.
Yeah.
But I think they meant it is. I think they meant it both affectionately and pointedly, in the same way that I refer to them, to their faces, Jesus freaks.
Right.
Now, they were upset about being referred to as Jesus freaks. but it's absolutely true.
Right.
You know, and I don't object to being called a pagan. I get it, but it's not accurate in the least because I don't worship trees.
Right. Well, I think by the classic definition of a Christian calling somebody a pagan, you believe in a god other than the one Christian God.
Yes,
I guess
exactly. So in that sense, it's accurate. I mean, but so in the book, I'm definitely much more of an agnostic and a seeker who uses this opportunity to write this book about the Bible as a real way to kind of really come to terms with his own my own belief system and feelings about God, etc. My question for you is, did this book prompt any real spiritual searching for you?
No, I wouldn't say so. But, you know, talking about Jesus freaks, when we started to write the Bible show, the play, The Bible, The Complete Word of God, Abridged, Jane was talking to my parents, my dad and my mom, who's since passed, and said, well, I just hope he, you know, I'm a little worried that he's going to suddenly become really, like, over the top religious and really overbearing. And
Jane was saying this.
Yeah, to my parents. And my parents said, well, like how? And she says, like you.
Oh, my God.
Which was awesome. And it didn't happen.
What did your parents think about that?
I think they had to laugh. I mean,
how could you not?
Yeah. But as I recall, the way this book came about was that Davis Perkins, who was the publisher at John Knox Westminster Press, saw the Bible show and approached us and wanted to publish the script or adapt the script a book. And we had already published the script or were in the process of it with Kip Gould of Broadway Play Publishing. That's right. And so we said, well, we can't do that, but what else could we do? So the stage play sort of inspired John Knox Westminster Press to talk to us, and then that we wanted to do something about the Bible, but something different. I remember when we were performing at Seattle Repertory Theater with the Millennium Show in 1999.
Right.
Sitting in the offices there in an empty cubicle writing away on this book.
Right, because we were in L.A. because Dee was massively pregnant.
Yeah.
Except for that day when she came up to Seattle Rep and performed at 8 months pregnant.
Yeah.
That's right. We were putting the finishing touches on it then. Well, I asked that question earlier about was it to provide any soul searching for you, and it did in my case, only in that I didn't grow up very religious at all. We read all the stories at the holidays of what, you know, of the various cultures and faiths and what are celebrated on the various days. But we weren't church-going folks. I don't have a belief. I believe in people. I don't go to church. So I don't have this. There isn't. I was never told, this is how you believe. Mm-hmm. So I don't. So I've spent many years kind of going, well, gee, I wonder what I do think about this kind of thing. So this was really fun from that standpoint for me to figure out. And I realized I at one point I was, and this is in the book, at one point I was a massive believer in reincarnation. For some reason, I had this notion in my head that there was a finite number of souls. Mm-hmm. And that when you died, you were reincarnated then again as something else. Because I thought, there's a finite number of souls, and this would just be fantastic existential spiritual recycling. Mm-hmm. everybody gets a second
religion
go
is green.
Religion, it's a green religion. But that was in my youth, in my salad day. Mm-hmm. I don't have. I guess my feeling is now. I certainly can't. I'm certainly not an atheist because I do find atheism just as sort of obnoxiously arrogant as the people who believe in one true God. It's like, really? You don't know. You don't know any more than they know.
Well, I think that's, honestly, that's my feeling. I mean, I do go to church, but I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
I think it's the height of ridiculousness to think if there is a higher being that we would know what it is and understand it and and this is what that higher being wants us to do. This is how this higher being wants us to vote.
Right.
This is what this higher being thinks on this particular issue. Really?
Really.
Well, so you're sort of equivalent. Yeah. You're as enlightened as that higher being. So I don't know either.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. You say you weren't told what to believe, but what did your parents believe? I guess you were raised to believe that it wasn't important to go to church.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's some level of, just by the way they live their lives, they're modeling what they believe.
Yes. You know, they believed in all the good things, you know.
Yeah.
Don't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Treat others as you would like them, as you would like to be treated.
Yeah.
Don't be prejudiced against whatever people because of their skin color or their socioeconomic class or whatever.
Or their religion.
Or their religion, except for religion. You really need to be prejudiced. No, they were not. They were very enormously talented. I mean, my dad was a white collar business guy, mm-hmm. who was pretty well off, and lived in a conservative community of Piedmont, California. You would expect him to be a pretty conservative guy, and he wasn't. In his politics,
yeah.
I think he might have voted for Nixon the first time, but not the second time. But I actually don't know that. But he wasn't, because he was very, very tolerant. His mother was a jazz singer, mm-hmm. you know. So he grew up with kind of funky music and showbiz, shady musicians and showbiz types.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is, I think, why he was smart enough to get white collar jobs. But yeah, no, we didn't. You know, it just wasn't. God wasn't a thing in our life.
Mm-hmm.
It was family.
Mm-hmm.
It was friends. It was what you do rather than what you say you do.
Hi, this is Paul Harris, nationally unknown radio host. This is the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This is the last week to see us perform this year of 2012 as we begin our third and final week at San Diego Repertory Theater in San Diego, California, with Michael Faulkner, Mick Orff, and Dustin Sullivan performing the ultimate Christmas show abridged. But then in 2013, we'll be playing in Yakima, Bermuda, and many places in England. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to Reed Martin and I talking about our own religious heritage.
My dad's grandfather and his great-grandfather were itinerant Presbyterian preachers who would go across the Midwest and found a church and stay there for a while and move on. Now, which is interesting because growing up, my dad's family didn't really go to church.
Okay.
But dad was curious, so he started to go. He grew up in Minnesota to the Lutheran church,
okay.
With friends or whatever, and you know, singing the hymns in the the church is one foundation, Jesus Christ our Lord,
the Swedish Chef version.
Yes. But that's the way they talk up there.
Daria.
Yeah, and I don't think mom's family was particularly religious. They weren't a religious. I think her family went to church occasionally, but then when I was a kid, they had a real born again experience,
okay.
And so. And so, you know, when Jane said, you know, I don't want them to be, you know, crazy religious like them.
Uh-huh.
Well, they could, because when they first were born again, it was crazy in our house.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, it settled.
Well, I think my dad always had a kind of a secret wish that he was more Catholic than he is. Because
mm-hmm.
he's, I think all four of his grandparents were Catholic. Three of them, or maybe their great-grandparents were sort of off-the-boat Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he had a Cousin Ralph, but Cousin Ralph was actually Father Ralph Titchener, who was the athletic director of University of San Francisco when Bill Russell was there. And so, you know, and so Dad...
This is Bill Russell, the Boston Celtic, not the Dodger shortstop.
Yes, just to clarify for the many sports nerds listening. At one point we visited a Catholic church just to be tourists and met the priest and several old ladies were saying, "Oh, this boy should grow up to be a priest." And Dad was kind of patting me on the head, going, "Yeah, that could happen." I remember that distinctly, and I was going, "Really? Is that a thing I want to do?" I don't think so. It's funny when I first met Dee's uncle and aunt, and her uncle is a lay deacon in the Catholic Church, and who actually performed the ceremony at our wedding. We got into a long, drunken conversation, late night conversation, with a guest of theirs who was in the seminary. And we were having, he and I were both picking apart our points of view. And he said, "Well, why do you do what you do?" And Dee stepped up. She was like the mama grizzly protecting her boyfriend at this point. Because he had a calling. because he had a calling to, and I thought that was what an interesting way of thinking about what I do in the theater. Right. I felt like it was my calling.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I'm called to do. Right. I'm doing it because I'm good at it, because I enjoy it, and that's how I can communicate. I guess that's the thing. We grew up doing shows, so I guess the theater was our church.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The surface is kind of a show.
Yeah. Well, and what's funny, what was fun about the book is to examine my beliefs and make fun of my own beliefs in the way that I then I'm hopefully making fun of the Bible as well, and the my spiritual journey turns out to be so sort of classically religious, I'll leave it to the readers to decide what is true and what is not true in that journey.
I think it's, if you read it, you'll find it's pretty much completely true.
One of the other reasons we wanted to change the name was we definitely want people to buy it, and we definitely want people to enjoy it, because it is a fun kind of celebration, and totally irreverent celebration of the greatest story ever sold, as we used to call it.
Well, it was a great title.
Yeah.
But as time went on, it was clear, it just became clear to us, as it should have been right off the bat, that title has nothing to do with the book.
No, exactly.
It sounds like, the title of the book sounds like the selling of religion.
Yeah.
And that's really what isn't what the book's about. So while it was a perfectly fine title, it wasn't the right title for this book.
Right. Well, and we didn't, the book is not listed, How the Bible Changed Our Lives Mostly for the Better, is not listed in the humor section of your ebook store. It's listed in the religion section, mostly because we think that the people who will enjoy the book most will know how to find it because of the Redu Shakespeare Company and our reputations. But there are many, many, many other people who will enjoy it who might stumble upon it in the religion section, or if they're searching for books about the Bible. That's another completely crass commercial reason why we put the Bible in the title.
Yeah. Now, Austin, how much does this book go for? It's wildly overpriced, isn't it?
It's wildly overpriced. It's a reduced book at a very reduced price of $3.99.
$399? Who's going to buy a book for...
It's $3. $3.99. That's under
$4. Oh, I'd buy 10 of them. Give them as gifts.
Give them as Christmas presents. Now, that is the current introductory price. So, if you're... as you listen to this in the December of 2012, it is currently available on Amazon for your Kindle Fire, whatever flavor Kindle you have, the Barnes & Noble on your Nook, whatever flavor that for your... It'll be in the iBook store soon. Apparently, there are other ebook stores, Sony and other places that have ebook stores. So it's for under $4, you can get it immediately, download it to your e-reader, and you can also give it as a gift. What a perfect thing for the holidays, whatever holiday it is.
I think it's a really fun book.
You're not biased at all. Neither am I.
Well, no, I think I tend to be hard on our stuff, and I go back and look at things and go, that section I'm not totally sold on. But in going through the proofs, we updated some of the references and stuff.
Yeah.
I think this book really holds up. It's an easy read. It's not long.
Yeah. No, it's not.
$3.99 is a good price for it. But it's informative and it's amusing. I like it. Reed Martin gives it a thumb up.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. You can find more information about How the Bible Changed Our Lives Mostly for the Better at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or you can go to your favorite online ebook store and search for the title, or search for my name, Austin Titchener. Searching for Reed's name is more difficult since there's more than one Reed Martin out there. And then send us your spiritual journey via email to feedback@ReducedShakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, itinerant preacher Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Maureen McDonald. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to our good friend, radio host Paul Harris. You can find his shows, podcasts, and blog at harrisonline.com. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 315 945ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Hi, my name's Matt Rippey, and I stumbled upon How the Bible Changed Our Lives Mostly for the Better. And I give it two... One, two, three, thumbs up.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.